everyone. As Tom shared with you all, we are having some technical difficulties, but I think we'll be able to get through it. We've been talking about being the salt of the earth and the light of the world, and I want to kind of put a little bit of a cap on the salt of the earth part. I know I promised we were going to talk about the chairs a few weeks ago, and people are still kind of wondering, what's happening to all these invisible, like missing chairs is going on? And I'm going to explain some of that today. How many of us in here, you know, show of hands, how many of us in here have problems? Right? There you go. Pretty easy. Donna looked at me. She's like, what kind of question is that, right? Like, of course, we all have problems. Now, I'm sure if we were to go through some of the, you know, top five list of problems that we have that occur on a regular basis, all of them would be slightly different, right? You know, everybody doesn't have the same problems. You know, sometimes generically, you know, we start talking about finances, start talking about health. You know, we all can, you know, kind of generally put them all in those groups in some way, shape, or form. But when you really get down to it, each of us has different problems. You know, life, the longer you live, it's like it seems like you just collect and accumulate them along the way, right? They just, you get more. And as soon as you get one, you know, taken care of and solved, then there's another one comes along. We have problems in life. That's no matter how much you love God, no matter how much faith you have, you know, God never promised us a life where we weren't going to have problems. You know, I was thinking of some of my problems, like the technical issues going on here. I don't know how it happens. Seriously, Jimmy will tell you. We come in here every Friday, right? And it's like Jimmy will call. He'll say, hey, man, we got everything together. And somehow, when I show up on Monday morning, something just magically didn't work, right? I would think that somebody was sabotaging it, but I don't believe anybody would just go about doing something like that on purpose. But it's so strange because there's always a problem. I was thinking of a problem I have, and Tony stole part of the sermon just now when we were doing the Lord's Supper. Like, you'll see this in just a second. That's a problem for me. Tony does things like that, and he's not up here, but he'll laugh when he gets up here and he sees the part that he stole. You know, I was thinking, you know, we have our Sunday school. Tom, he's the student in the class. He's the problem, right? If this were a classroom, if I were in a school, he would be in a in detention or in the principal's office every week. He's a problem. We all have problems, right? And yet when we think about problems and the fact that we're always going to have problems, oftentimes we can look at our problems, we can look at these obstacles, these things that get in our way, and forget that those things don't have anything to do with our faith. Our faith has to be such that we overcome those problems, not because it's easy, not because all the problems are going to go away, because we're just going to get new problems. I was thinking, you know, it's great to see Trey and Kiara. They brought the baby with them. They took me at my word. I said, don't come back without the baby, right? So they came back with the baby. And here's the thing. They're new parents, and the baby's beautiful. But guess what? All of us who are parents in here, we know this. They're just signing up for more problems, right? You know, and that's just one child. Wait till there's more. Then it's like, okay, now I've got double the problems, exponentially the problems. We're going to have problems, but our faith should be such that regardless of the problems, regardless of the obstacles, regardless of the things that stand in the way or seem like they're in the way, our faith has to overcome it. When we talk about being the salt of the earth, that expectation that God has for us to be the salt of the earth, it doesn't change regardless of our problems. He expects us to have the impact, to be able to affect the world the same, whether we have problems or not, health problems, financial problems, family problems, marital problems, criminal problems, whatever problems you have, God expects you to be the salt of the earth. And your faith has to be one that is accompanied with that. Otherwise, it really doesn't matter all the tools, all the resources, all of the things that help you with your problems. If you don't have faith, then you're still no good for what God's purpose is and what he wants to use you for. The title of the sermon, I borrowed this from a song. It's called 99 Problems. 99 problems. Now, I'm going to talk about these chairs for a second. When I was preparing this portion of this series, I thought about this song. Why? Because I came in here and I was doing some, I called myself helping Darlene out with the chairs. But as I was going through the chairs, I counted and I was like, we have 99 chairs in here. 99 chairs. And I was thinking, when's the last time we've ever used 99 seats? And most of you are kind of thinking, man, I've been here a while. I don't know if I've ever seen us use 99 seats. Now, the chairs themselves are not consequential. And I was saying I didn't want to start removing a bunch of chairs from the back and then people think, why is he taking my chair? It wasn't personal. I wasn't taking your chair. It wasn't like I was like, okay, well, you know, I know that, you know, Donna or Betty or, you know, Margaret or somebody sits in the back, so I'm going to take their chair. But the idea was, you know, you think about all the chairs and think about what it means for us to be the salt of the earth, what it means for us to have the impact, what it means for us to be able to reach, to seek, and save the lost and make disciples. And here's the thing. We don't really need 99 chairs in here right now. You know, we don't need all of the seats. Just like by evidence of what just happened, we don't need the technology. It's nice to have everything up on display. It's nice to have computers. It's nice to be able to do things to make us more orderly and efficient. But the fact is, we don't need those things. Can we have problems? The technology, you know, we have, you know, like I said, Darlene comes in and she does a great job. She brings in her crew. They come and they clean up. We just come in here and just, there's never any lint on the floor and everything's all orderly. That's because somebody else came in and did it. We have all these things. We have all these problems. We have all these concerns, all these things to deal with, just like we have all these 99 chairs. But guess what? That's not really our problem. Now, the song is by a guy named Jay-Z. You might recognize him. Jay-Z, for obvious reason, anybody knows who Jay-Z is, I cannot recite the song to you. But he is basically, in a nutshell, saying that I have all these problems, but he's talking about his beautiful wife, Beyonce. He says, but Beyonce is not one of the problems. My wife is not a problem, right? You think about it. What is it that makes us the salt of the earth and the light of the world? What is it that allows us to be able to grow the kingdom? What is it that allows us to be able to reach people who don't know him? And guess what? We have all kinds of obstacles and barriers and things that stop us, but it's not the chairs. It's not the technology, it's not the mechanism, it's not the actual physical things that we may look at when we come here on Sunday morning, or even some of the relationships. We think we have all these problems, all these things that get in our way, but there's really only one thing that we need to be the salt of the earth. For all the problems that we have and all the obstacles that we have, we don't really need more stuff. So let's look at what we do need. We're going to start here. In Matthew chapter 16, we'll read verse 5 through 12. Matthew chapter 16, verse 5 through 12, it says, when they went across the lake, the disciples forgot to take bread. Be careful, Jesus said to them. Be on your guard against the yeast of the Pharisees and Sadducees. They discussed this among themselves and said, it's because we didn't bring any bread. Aware of their discussion, Jesus asked, you of little faith, why are you talking amongst yourselves about having no bread? Do you still not understand? Don't you remember the 5 loaves for the 5,000 and how many basketfuls you gathered? Or the 7 loaves for the 4,000 and how many basketfuls you gathered? How is it that you don't understand that I was not talking about you to you about bread? But be on your guard against the yeast of the Pharisees and Sadducees. Then they understood that he was not telling them to guard against the yeast used in bread, but against the teachings of the Pharisees and Sadducees. Now, before I go any further, Tony stole this, but it's going to get worse, okay? He stole more. You're going to see here in just a second. But as he was talking about the yeast and how yeast spreads, and the way that yeast spreads, it takes time for the bread to rise. And he's making this comparison between how this yeast spreads, how it's almost infectious, how it like, goes through the whole dough. And it only takes a little bit. It only takes a small amount. You don't have to have a lot of yeast. You just have to have enough yeast. And when he talks about the teachings of the Sadducees and the Pharisees, what he's talking about is not, let's understand, Jesus was not saying something that was directly in opposition in most cases to what the Pharisees and the Sadducees were teaching. But what the Pharisees and the Sadducees in their teachings were also teaching, what was so pervasive was their cynical nature, their doubt. They were chipping away at the faith. Even though their teachings were according to Moses' law in the strictest sense, there was no faith in it. And so what he's warning them against is saying, you've seen the miracles. You've seen the way that I work. You've seen the amazing meals that were prepared out of just a few loaves of bread and a few fish. You've seen people raised from the dead. You've seen me heal people. You've watched it with your own eyes. He's saying, guard yourselves against what? Their teaching, because their teachings promote doubt. It's like, yeah, I know you saw that, but actually what the, just so we're clear, we're going to look at this in a second. What he's saying is the Pharisees and the Sadducees were saying, yeah, Jesus did this, but he did this by the power of Satan. He did this by some other means. Now, you think about it, when we are to be the salt of the earth, we are expected as Christ followers to go out and have an impact on the world. You can't do it if you're doubting what you've already seen. You can't do it if you're saying, well, I know what I've experienced, but I just don't want to believe it. I just doubt. I don't have faith. And going back to the chair, see, here's the thing. You know, think about cynicism. Think about how our religious world is today. Think about church culture. There are so many things we can point at and look at this church and this ministry and this pastor and this minister, this preacher, and how corrupt this was, and this church was stealing money and all the embezzlement. And there's so much cynicism and criticism and so much just disgusting behavior that we see in churches all over. But I'm talking to us today. I'm talking to us at the Dover Church of Christ today. Here's the thing. We have seen God working. We know that that corruption, that filth, we know that false teaching that goes on out there, we know that's not happening here. We know that, well, I know that the preacher is not getting a whole bunch of money under the table, right? My car's in the shop right now. Okay, we know I'm not, you know, saving up for an airplane or a jet, you know, any type of jet, not even like a model jet, right? Like, we know where the money goes in the church. We know the leadership. We have personal relationships with Curtis and George and Tony and Mark and Jimmy. We know all of the workings. We know all of the different ways in which the body here, our congregation, is functioning. But do we still doubt? Because when we think about all these seats we have in here, and we think, well, why aren't they being filled? Well, why is it that people aren't showing up? Why is it that we're called to be the salt of the earth, but it doesn't seem like our impact is very broad? It doesn't seem like we're actually making a dent in it sometimes, and we wonder. And the answer is not found in the problems, in the obstacles, and in the structural things, and we're limited, and we don't have this, and we don't have that, and we, you know, the computer doesn't work sometimes, and sometimes the singing isn't the best, and all these different things. Those aren't the real problems that's keeping us from being the salt of the earth. What's causing it is that we've seen God working. We know what Christ did for us on the cross, but we still doubt. We still lack faith. You know, this is part two of Tony stealing the message. You know, when they talk about the yeast of the teachings of the Pharisees and the Sadducees, you know, it's like you think about bread and how it works. You know, I can get us out of here a little bit earlier now because Tony already explained how it works. But the fact is, you know, the chemistry. I saw this and I found it interesting. Again, I don't have to go through it. But how yeast actually goes through the bread. That cynicism that he's talking about, the Pharisees and the Sadducees. That chipping away at Christ's deity and what makes Christ the only way, the only route, the only path to God. There are people out there who claim to be Christians. They claim to be those of faith. They say, yes, I'm a part of the body, but they teach something other than Jesus. Or they teach, well, Jesus can't quite do that. Or even though that's what he said, that's not really what he meant. And we know what the word says. We know what's true. Not only because we read it right there in the pages in the black and white. You know, those who have, anybody here have that red letter Bible where it's like these are Jesus' words and they're in red? Like, we see it right there in the red letters. And we're actually witnessing it. We've actually seen it developing in our own lives. And yet we still doubt. We still don't tell people. He's healed our marriage. He's healed our families. He's forgiven us. He's healed us. I was talking to somebody about that this morning, how, you know, you get 52 weeks in a year, right? You can look back 52 weeks. And you go 52 weeks, it's kind of like yeast, like, you know, yeast rises. If I, you know, go ahead and knead the dough and then I sit it there and I'm looking at it, in 5 minutes, it may not be that noticeable. But let it sit there. You know, my grandmother used to cover it with the little towel, you know. And she'd go off and do other stuff, go to the grocery store, do something out in the car and come back or whatever. She'd wash her hands, come back. Hours later, and that little bit of bread is grown. See, just like the yeast of the Pharisees and the Sadducees was pervasive and it caused people to doubt, when you put faith to work, when you actually act on your faith, it grows in the same way. What Jesus is not, he's not only saying, stop listening to them, stop following them, stop falling prey to the criticism and the cynicism. But he's saying, look at what I've done. That should build your faith. That should increase your faith. That should inspire you and encourage you and call you higher and make you want to do more, to spread the word, to tell people about me. Another passage I want to look at, because this gives us a little context on that whole Pharisees and Sadducees thing. This is what happened right before Jesus warns the disciples. And he was very upset with the disciples because he's thinking to himself, if anybody should be able to distinguish and determine what the Pharisees and Sadducees were doing, it should be you. Why? Because you've been following me. You know that old saying, you're preaching to the choir? He's like, I'm preaching to the choir. You're here all the time. You've seen it work. How can you be doubting? What was happening right before that in verse 1, same chapter, says the Pharisees and Sadducees came to Jesus and tested him by asking him to show them a sign from heaven. He replied, when evening comes, you say, it will be fair weather, for the sky is red, and in the morning, today it will be stormy, for the sky is red and overcast. You know how to interpret the appearance of the sky, but you cannot interpret the signs of the time. A wicked and adulterous generation looks for a sign, but none will be given it except the sign of Jonah. Jesus then left them and went away. What is he saying here? Well, it's two things. Number one, the Pharisees and the Sadducees are saying, you know what? I see all this great stuff you're doing, Jesus, but I'm still not convinced. I am still not convinced. See, right before this, in the interest of time, we're not going to go back over it, but right before this, in the previous chapter, we see this chronology here. Jesus had just healed a demon-possessed man. You know, we talked last week about those people that were unclean and not seen as fit to be a part of regular society, being a part of the larger community. They were outcasts because they were dirty. They were criminals. They were demon-possessed. They were prostitutes. They were, you know, lawbreakers, and they were adulterers. They were all these things that the salt has to touch in order to make them clean. And so they see him actually do this miracle where he heals someone. They're no longer demon-possessed. And they're saying, I know what I saw, and I saw all those people you fed, and I saw the blind people that you gave sight to, but I'm still not convinced. At some point, the question has to be asked, are you not convinced, or do you just not want to be convinced? Do you just want to doubt? Because that's possible too. He's saying, how is it that you can interpret, you can see so clearly when the sky is above you, you know when it's going to rain, you know when it's going to be clear, you know when it's time to work, and you know when it's time to bring the animals in because you're not going to be able to do anything that day. You can interpret the sky, but when it's clear as day and it's right in your face, you can't see it. You know, I go back to what I was saying. There's a lot of corruption that goes on all over the world. There's a lot we see in government, but when we're talking about just in churches, we see a lot of it. But even when we don't see it here, even when we know that God is doing something here, we experience the goodness of God, do we still doubt? We've watched people. We've seen how God has worked in their lives and how they've changed. People who were undoubtedly what, by any standard you might call, or any measure you might call, dirty or unclean, unsaved, sinful, ungodly, they've changed their life. Sometimes we don't even have to go that far. We can just look at ourselves if we remember just how dirty we were. And we know we're not completely clean. There's nothing we can do to ever get to that point. But we know we're not completely clean. We know that we still need forgiveness. We know that we still have to repent and take ourselves to the cross every day. But we've seen it in our own lives. We've seen it in others around us. Do we still lack faith? How do we demonstrate that faith? It's our lack of faith. What Jesus was so disappointed in the disciples about was, he's like, you're in the presence of God right now. You're watching these amazing things happen in your own life. That's why he was admonishing them. He's saying, how can you still not believe? And the question for us has to be the same. How can you still not believe when you're in this place and you're watching God work in your own life? Tony didn't steal this part. Actually, this part is accredited to Mark. You know, and I have to say that as a disclaimer because he threatened me at the hospital that this was his idea. And I said, you know what, you're right, Mark. But we were talking last week about the saline drips, you know, the salt water, the solution that they use to clean things out, right? And it was so interesting because we were visiting Miss LaVeda in the hospital. We went to go see her. I believe it was Wednesday. We went up there, and up Tuesday, excuse me. We went up there, and Mark said, look at this. You know, and we're looking at, it was a saline drip, just like that. And notice what it says up there, all these, this is just a picture, but notice what it says, 0.9%, 0.0, I'm sorry, 0.9%. Now you think about that, it says 1,000 milliliters. That's saying of 1,000 milliliters of this concentration, only 9 of those milliliters are actually sodium chloride. That's how it works in chemistry, right? When it says 0.9%. You think about how much salt that really is. And just like with the yeast, just like when we look at yeast, and you don't need but a little bit to work through the whole batch of dough to make it rise. The same thing works with the salt of the earth. He doesn't need a billion people. He just needs a little bit. Just like when it talks about faith, as small as a mustard seed, right? You don't have to start out with the mountain moving already. He's saying, no, just a small bit of faith, and you can move this thing. You can command this thing. It will bend to your will. Things will happen. It's not the mustard seed of faith. It's not the amount of faith. It's whether or not you're willing to act on that faith, whether you're willing to put it into action. Because just a little bit of faith, just a little bit of the attitude that says, I'm going to trust God, I'm going to do what he asked me to do, and I'm not going to doubt that what he says is true and that it will work for me. That's the difference. You know, I was sharing this the other day, how you think about 0.9% of salt, which is so small in the presence of, you know, 1,000 milliliters. And for most of us who are healthy and walking around, you know, we don't know the cost of a, you know, saline drip. I'll tell you, it's anywhere from $200 to $500. I know, right? But see, here's the thing. For the world, for those who don't know Christ, you know, a saline drip, that's like salt water. But for somebody, that's life. That saline drip, there's a reason why hospitals use those all across the world. That's providing somebody life. That's keeping Miss Levada alive. Your little bit of salt, your little bit of saltiness, just your little bit of faith is the difference between life and death for someone. You're not just one grain of salt. You're not just a little bit salty. Christ isn't just saying, okay, we're just going to do a little of something. No, he said, you will be able to do even greater things than I did. Meaning you will be able to have an impact even beyond my reach during my ministry and my time. But are you willing to have faith that just your little bit of salt can make a difference? We'll finish it up here in Luke chapter 18. Starting verse 1, it says, then Jesus told his disciples a parable to show them that they should always pray and not give up. He said, in a certain town, there was a judge who neither feared God nor cared what people thought. And there was a widow in that town who kept coming to him with the plea, grant me justice against my adversary. For some time, he refused. But finally, he said to himself, even though I don't fear God or care what people think, yet because this widow keeps bothering me, I will see that she gets justice so that she won't eventually come and attack me. That's pretty scary. She scared him. And the Lord said, listen to what the unjust judge says. And will not God bring about justice for his chosen ones who cry out to him day and night? Will he keep putting them off? I tell you, he will see that they get justice and quickly. However, when the Son of Man comes, will he find faith on the earth? This is actually a very stirring passage. It talks about determination and this persistence of this widow. She really wanted something really bad. Doesn't even specify exactly what she wanted. We just know she wanted justice to the point where he was like, man, I don't want no problems out of this lady. I don't want this woman attacking me. I don't want her dragging me through it. I'm going to give her what she asked for. I'm going to give her this justice. And it even gives that little caveat where he says, I'm not even interested in pleasing God. I'm not necessarily doing this because I want to be considered right, but just out of her determination, her willingness to fight for it, I'm going to give her what she asked for. And we see how this works. You know, it points out how the man, he you know, says he wasn't particularly righteous. He wasn't looking at it from the standpoint of doing what's right by God, and how even that will compel someone to do what is just. But it ends it here, and it's so powerful when it says, but when the Son of Man comes, will he find faith on the earth? How we look at faith, how we measure faith, it's not necessarily by, you know, we can't just look and say, okay, well, the attendance at church was this, or the amount of money that we collect was this, or the amount of people who got baptized and gave their life to him was this. And that is the determining factor. And we can just measure it like it's just by the numbers. But we have to each look at ourselves and ask ourselves, is Jesus going to be able to find faith in me? Because we all know sitting here whether or not the reason why we're not being the salt of the earth or we're not having the impact that we could be having, we all know the reason. We know in our heart of hearts. whether or not we're really having that impact or not having that impact, and we know the reason why either is the case. It's a matter of us having the attitude that we're going to pray and that we're going to do these things in faith. It only takes a small trace amount of faith for a person to see God, the God of the universe, work. I'll share a very quick story here, two of them actually, but you know, the first one, I'll be brief. So Friday, I had a very rough night on Thursday. I didn't get any sleep. I got a phone call about 1 o'clock. Well, it was about 2 o'clock in the morning, and it was from one of my contractors, and they were saying how the website went down, the server was messed up, and so I ended up being on call with tech support for like 3 hours. And I had already gone to bed late. So, and you know, kids don't care, my wife don't care, so it was like, hey, I still got to take the kids to school in the morning. I'm training for this competition. I'm thinking, I go in at 8:30 in the morning to work out every day that I don't want to miss, and I drop Kendall off, and I said, you know what, I'm going home. I'm going to sleep. And I go, and I didn't just go take a nap, like, you know, recline chair. No, I got in there. I put my pajamas on. I got under the covers. And at 9 o'clock, I was, like, probably in rapid eye movement in 10 minutes. So about 10:15, I hear the doorbell ring. And it woke me up, and I thought, well, whatever it is, UPS, you know, postal service, that's usually when they come. I'm like, they're going to have to leave it at the door. It'll be there. Nobody's going to steal it. You know, whatever. I got insurance on it. And I rolled over. And then about a minute later, the doorbell rang again. I said, okay, that's not UPS. That's not FedEx. So I look out, and I thought it was maybe the neighbor back there. I didn't see the neighbor. Now I looked out the front window. I didn't see a car. Then I go to the door, and the cat's at the door like, yeah, you heard something. So we open the door, and I look out, and I don't see anyone. I thought, now I know what I heard. Cat's like, uh-huh. So me and the cat, we walk over to the window, and I look out, and I see a man walking, and he's kind of looking at his phone, and he, you know, goes on up the street. And I thought, well, whatever he wants, he's going to have to come back because I'm going back to bed, right? And surely enough, right as I was just about to take my robe off and crawl right back into bed, I said, you know what? I have no idea who this person was, but clearly they were looking for something. So I get dressed, and I said, I need to go check the mailbox anyway. I run out to the mailbox. There's nothing in there. He hadn't come yet. He's been running late lately. And I see the guy, and I yell at him. I say, hey, what's up? He says, I was looking for you. He says, someone told me to come and knock on the door at the house behind the church. And he told me where the church was. He said, actually, you know, my daughter, it was her mom. She said that she came to you once before. It's been probably over a year. And she needed some help, and that the church helped her. And I need some help. I'm thinking, go on. And he says, I'm in a really bad situation. He goes on to explain his situation. He says, I started not to ring the bell because she told me, look for the black car. Well, my car is in the shop. It's being painted. It'll be back tomorrow. It looks very good, actually. And the thing is, I was in a rental car, so he saw the blue car, right? This ain't even my car. He said, I started not to ring the bell because I looked before and I didn't see the black car. I said, well, but I got to try. It's just me and my daughter that I'm raising. And we need some help. I said, well, I'll give you some help. And we get to talking, you know, getting to know one another. And it was so interesting because he goes on to share his life, share about his past, share about how he was a criminal, you know, shared about how many things he had messed up in his life. He talked about how part of what he was dealing with was he was at Connections. He has to get with Connections to be able to deal with a previous problem with drunken driving. He had an accident, and he needs to get that fixed in order to be able to get his license back because it makes it difficult to work and get around when you can't drive and you can't, you know, provide for yourself. And so he's finding little jobs here and little jobs there, and he's staying in a hotel until he actually starts his job next week, and then, you know, they're going to help him, you know, the school's going to help him get into a place. But then I found out later that the reason why he's not in the place he was before is because of the bad influences that are there where he used to live. And he said, I can't live like this anymore. I can't live this criminal life anymore. I can't go out here on the streets. He said, yeah, I have friends and I know people that may be willing to help me, but I'm not willing to do the things I used to. I'm not willing to go back and do those things in order to get the help. And as a result of that conviction, he's left in a place where he's gone to other churches. He's gone to other places. He said, but she told me I could find some help here. And, you know, we get to talking some more. You know, he's sharing about all these different things. And the thing that kept ringing in my head was last week, this same time, we were talking about those that we need to be available to. How very often we want a nice, neat, clean, pretty, antiseptic congregation, a church where nobody ever had any sin. We only want doctors. We don't want to heal the sick. We don't want to bring those who have diseases, those who are ill, those who are the criminals. We don't want to bring them into our nice, neat, tidy little church. And even though I was sleepy, I'm so grateful that God said, no, you need to go seek that person out. You need to go seek them out. You need to go find them. You need to go talk to them. That wasn't anything that I did. That wasn't anything special. It wasn't like I had some magic formula. I mean, I had been praying, but I wasn't praying specifically for this person. I didn't know them. We see that prayer that this, you know, when he says, if you pray and you're insistent and you're determined and you go back to God, he will answer. But do you have faith enough to believe that when you pray and say, God, let me be the salt of the earth, make me useful, that he's going to put somebody in your path? He's going to actually inspire and grow your faith because he's going to use you to impact somebody's life. You know, it was interesting because this time last year, there was another man I befriended, and I haven't been able to, you know, catch up with him recently. He did a lot of work here for the church. You know, the interesting thing was, you know, we got back there and went to his room, and, you know, we took care of the room fees. But the thing was, he's actually in the same exact room that same man was in last year. Not just the same hotel, the exact same room. Do we have a faith that says, I'm going to actually allow God to use my little mustard seed, my little bit of salt, my 0.9, that God's going to use that to make a difference? See, once that happens, just here in little old Dover, just here at the little old Dover Church of Christ, we're not just going to have 99 chairs. We're going to need all 99 of those chairs. But it's going to take you being willing to be that salt of the earth and be the light of the world. We'll close it here quickly. A few questions. Do you measure faith by your actions or the results of your actions? Are you looking at the proper signs? Very often, we measure our faith by the outcomes and the things that happen, and those things matter, but the faith doesn't start with God doing something first. Your faith starts with you doing something. My faith grew immensely just in the past 48 hours. I didn't even see it coming, but it didn't start with God doing a bunch of things. It started with me deciding, you know what? I'm going to go and I'm going to find that person and I'm going to do it in faith. Because I don't know what God has prepared, but he has something prepared. Do we measure our faith based on what God is going to do first, or do we measure it based on ourselves, which it should be? What influences have the most impact on your faith? Are you surrounded by those that doubt or those that believe? This matters so much because as he's warning them about their faith, what he's saying is, guess what? You know that pastor we're talking about, bad company corrupts good character? You spend enough time around people that are faithless, guess what's going to happen to you? You'll become faithless. You spend enough time around people that don't have the same convictions on sexual purity or on foul language or on laziness or on their health or on their finances. You spend enough time around people that don't care about the poor, guess what's going to happen to you? You become indifferent to the poor. You become indifferent on all those things. we have to consider that our faith matters, and it also matters who we spend our time around, because they will affect our faith. I know my time's up. Have you given up on real, radical, incredible faith in exchange for comfort or low expectations? Does a solution require more salt, or does your faith need to put the salt into action? Very often, all of the problems that we have, all the things that we deal with and encounter, we look at those things and we think, I just need more faith. And we do need more faith. But it starts not with, God, give me more, but God's actually saying, I've given you all the signs you need. I've given you all the examples you need. There's nothing for you to be afraid of. There's nothing for you to be, you know, apprehensive about. What I really need you to do is put your faith into action, and then you will see just how much of an impact that you can have. Do we allow ourselves to have these low expectations, and so we just concede that, you know what, God can only do this much? Or do we expect that God's going to do more and we behave accordingly? And finally, what are you willing to do to regain your saltiness when it comes to faith and the ability to know and see God? There has to be a heart that's willing. What is your willingness? What are you willing to do to see that faith? The Pharisees and the Sadducees were not willing to do anything different or see anything different, even though it was right in front of them. I just told you one story. You know, I was thinking about it, and I was talking to Dwight about this. You know, one of the things about Dwight, most of you all met Dwight and Angela. One thing about Dwight was when we first met him last year, and he and Angela, or earlier this year rather, in the winter, he's very open about this. You know, Dwight was in Connections because he was overcoming drug problems. And he talked about, very openly, about how years ago, part of the difficulty he was having problem finding work in the past was because he had a criminal record. He had done real time in prison. Now, you would know him and you would see him. You wouldn't think anything of it. You know, I talked to him. He said, no, please, please share this. Because we need to understand that, you know, just like that little bit of salt water looks like just a bag of salt water to us, but it's life for somebody else. When we walk past Dwight's, we don't know that it's Dwight. They just look like another person. What are we willing to do to get to know people, to really reach out to people, to really get into their lives? Because what we just take for granted as hanging around a bunch of people that have a little bit of salt and a little mustard seed of faith, it's life to somebody else. What are you willing to do to give life to somebody else? You know, the price of that saline drip, you know, $200 is a lot of money. $500 is certainly a lot of money. And yet, sometimes people argue over it. But guess what? Miss Levada's not arguing about it. It's keeping her alive. Do we give our contributions weekly like it's keeping somebody alive? Do we come to our meetings? Do we worship with one another? Do we follow? Do we call one another? Do we fellowship? Do we pray with one another and pray for one another like it's giving somebody life? Do we have that kind of faith? Do you have that kind of faith? You as an individual, not just the church, but you. Are you someone who's never had that kind of faith, but you want that type of faith? Are you a person who wants to know what it means to have a real relationship with God, who knows what it means to actually take on Jesus, to be baptized, to have your sins forgiven, and to actually walk in a new life? Is this something that you've ever done? If you haven't, today is the day to do it. Don't walk away. Don't allow cynicism and doubt and all of the things that are going on in other places stop you from being that man or woman of God who says, I want to follow Jesus till I die. If that's you, please feel free to come forward. As a church, we will pray for you. We will teach you. We will help you. We want you to be one of his workers. We want you to be free to know that you are a son or a daughter of God. Please come forward as we stand and sing our song of invitation.